Tere tulemas kulama fast and curious nelianda huya nelianda tepisodi. That was Estonian. That was Estonian, and it meant welcome to the fourth episode of our fourth season of Fast and Curious. So here we go. 2 days in Estonia and I can speak Estonian. And this time we will be doing the whole episode in English so that our new Estonian friends are able to listen. And this episode is full of good stuff. In our catch-up, Lea is very excited about her upcoming Tony Robbins trip to Palm Springs, and I talk about an important evening this week with lots of impressive women. In our deep dive, we share facts, learnings, and impressions of our trip to Estonia and have the honor of interviewing the former Estonian president, Kersti Kaljulaid, in today's episode. In Win of the Week, we talk about a very special person who basically did everything right and reminded Lea and me of our younger selves. In Tool of the Week, we share our insights about Figma, and Lea has the last word today.
Jetzt kommt Werbung. Ja, heute möchten wir euch Sage vorstellen, und das ist ein global führender Anbieter für cloudbasierte HR-Software, der sich darauf spezialisiert hat, KMUs dabei zu helfen, ihre Geschäftsprozesse zu vereinfachen und zu automatisieren. Und ich als Gründerin, aber viele von euch Geschäftsführer, Führungskräfte kennen das, kann das total nachempfinden, weil wir wollen natürlich unsere Mitarbeiter, wir wollen tolle Leute einstellen, wir wollen sie dann befähigen, einen super Job machen zu können. Und das alles braucht aber viel Bürokratie und viel administrativen Aufwand und Arbeit. Also zum Beispiel das ganze Bewerbermanagement, dass man sich ordentlich meldet, dass man weiß, wie viele Menschen sich auf welche Jobs beworben haben, wo die gerade in dem ganzen Bewerbungsprozess stehen. Dann das Thema Reisekosten mit unseren ganzen Mitarbeitern. Wir hatten gerade eine riesen Feedback-Cycle in unserem Unternehmen. Auch das muss nachgehalten werden. Die Daten müssen irgendwo hinterlegt werden, sodass ich da wieder darauf zugreifen kann. Also wir haben ganz, ganz viele HR-Herausforderungen, ja, die einfach so eine Führung eines Unternehmens mit sich bringen. Und da kann man sich Hilfe holen durch HR-Software.
Jetzt hat das Unternehmen eine neue Studie, HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit, herausgebracht, für die sie über 1000 Personalverantwortliche in KMUs befragt haben. Und die Befragten haben mitgeteilt, was sie nachts wach hält, woran sie arbeiten, was für Technologien wie KI sie einsetzen und wie sie über die Zukunft von HR denken. Um da mal ein paar Insights mit euch zu teilen. 98% der Befragten macht ihre Arbeit Spaß, denn sie sind in den HR-Bereich gegangen, um etwas zu bewirken. Also das ist doch schon mal richtig schön. Allerdings hat die Studie auch ergeben, dass sich aktuell 87% der HR-Teams gestresst fühlen und 78% der HR-Führungskräfte glauben, dass der Einsatz von KI bei HR-Aufgaben ihnen in Zukunft viel Zeit ersparen wird. Das hilft also sicherlich auch dabei, dass sich die HR-Teams weniger gestresst fühlen. So, und wenn ihr jetzt neugierig geworden seid und weitere Insights aus der Studie haben möchtet, dann ladet euch die Studie kostenfrei auf www.sage.de/hr, und Sage wird geschrieben S-A-G-E, also auf sage.de/hr herunter. Und alle Infos findet ihr wie immer auch nochmal im Linktree in unseren Shownotes.
Werbung Ende.
Catch-up.
Yeah, so here we go. An English episode, which is actually quite weird, to be honest. But we'll get into it. I think our English by the end of this episode is going to be even better than
it's all for cross-cultural. It's all for cross-cultural reasons, yeah, to
for
bring Europe closer
and
together.
Diversity.
Yeah,
exactly. And yeah, that's not the only thing which is hard for me within this episode. The second hard part is that I lost my microphone when we flew back from Estonia. So either I left it in the security or I lost it somewhere in my home. I don't know which one it is, but I'm here with my kind of cell phone microphone setup, which is so complicated and annoys me so much. And I did really, really realize again, Verena, that I do have these chaotic moments way more than you do. I was missing this week.
Yeah, but my favorite was when we got off the plane and you walked out with your handbag. And then when you were just about to leave the aircraft, you turned around and said, oh, my suitcase. And then you had to go back 20 aisles. I like that one.
I thought you didn't even see that.
Of course I did. Of course I did.
Because
I thought,
you
like,
didn't,
typical
you
her.
Didn't comment it until no. today. So I was like, ooh, I got away with it without anybody noticing.
I wanted to be nice. I wanted to be nice. But not
I
today.
I had to go back like be like against the aisle. So everybody was moving
everybody
towards
hated
me.
You.
And I had to go back against everybody. Oh, and it's so annoying, to be honest. Like, I have this so often. It's just so annoying to be me every once in a while, because this creative chaos has been with me since I'm a little kid, and it's just, ah, it just gets me every once in a while. And this week, you actually did an interview, which we're going to release next week, which I was yep. so excited about. And I also organized everything around it, and yep. And I wasn't there.
I know.
So you will see that next week or hear it next week.
But I did my very best to include you, although you weren't there.
You.
I have a surprise for you in that interview. One you
oh,
don't
wow.
know yet.
Oh, yeah. God.
A little Easter egg.
Okay, wow. Thank you. A little Christmas present. Well, I hope that I'm going to be way more organized for Thursday. I already did my ESTA for the US.
Very
and
good.
I had to fill out a lot of pre-questions for my Tony Robbins event, Date with Destiny. So we're flying, I think, at 5 or 6 in the morning on Thursday. And I really hope that my, you know, alarm bell is going to go off, that I've packed everything, that I have everything with me, that I have a new microphone until that time so that we can do our podcast from there. So, oh, already crossing my fingers. But seriously, Verena, I can't wait. Like, I'm so excited. I'm stress eating. So I'm
yeah,
eating like 5 chocolates a day.
I would be stress eating so much. Even by listening to you, I'm already stress eating.
So let me tell you what I found out. The event is 6 days and it's actually like 14 to 16 hours a day.
And you are there for 6 days?
Yes. And
oh
every day
God.
You're there until like 14 to 16 hours within the event space. The
what a
event
nightmare.
Space, you know, in the US, they kind of use the Klimaanlage, you
yeah.
know, the,
yeah. the air conditioning.
Thanks. God. You know, usually I have these problems the other way around. And now I'm actually.
Now everyone's
finally
like, can you
speak
please speak English and not so much German? Yeah.
So the Americans, they're always using their air conditionings. And I read, luckily before the event, that Tony Robbins wants everybody to stay awake during the 14 to 16 mm-hmm. hours. Mm-hmm. So he cools down the places even more so that you're freezing. That's so you would basically die there.
Very climate friendly,
you wouldn't,
yeah.
You wouldn't be able to operate.
Definitely not.
Because
no.
I saw you in the cold in Estonia and you were basically not be able
out
to
of
move
order.
Or speak anymore.
No, I'm out of order. Yeah.
So it would be really hard for you, but for me as well. So I'm packing a lot of like really warm suits and you're supposed to wear a lot of comfy clothes and so on. And it's going to be crazy.
Sounds like an amazing event. I can't even imagine why people would pay money for it. But yeah, great. Have fun 6 days, 14 to 16 hours in the cold.
What events are you gonna be jumping
well,
on?
Well, I'm obviously, as you know me, I'm the Streber in the room. So I'm obviously doing something totally different. No, I'm joking. I'm so curious to hear what you say afterwards. But
yeah, me too.
I would like to take bets. Are you going to come back and say, it was the best time of my life, or are you going to come back and say that was weird?
I think I'm going to say it was the best time of my life.
Okay.
I think I'm going to come back and be like, Verena, it changed my
okay.
life.
Okay.
My destiny is going to be a
oh,
different
wow.
one from now on.
Okay. So everyone out there, enjoy this final episode where Lea is still the person you've known for
herself.
40 episodes now. She speaks English today, fair enough. But from next week onwards, you'll and me will experience a total new Lea. Yeah,
yes.
Well, I'm not going to have this transformational moment, I think. But
sadly.
I'm doing something very special. And not I am doing something special, but there is a very special evening this week at the Hotel Adlon here in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And it is organized by Frauen 100,
yeah.
Which I've attended often. And this time they are putting the revolution in Iran into the center of the evening.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm moderating, where I'm again thinking like, why? Yeah,
why?
Why am I moderating an evening?
Why
on
did I
Iran?
Put my hand up?
Why did I put my hand up? I didn't even put my hand up. I just didn't say no. And I'm just going to let others shine because I have no role in this other than to let others shine, because there will be amazing speakers from Düsen Tekkal, Natalie Amiri, Minu Barati. So a lot of loud, amazing voices that kind of for months already gave us the pictures, the stories behind the people in Iran on the streets in everyday lives there at the moment. And they are not there by themselves. We also have politicians of all parties, SPD, Greens, FDP, CDU. And we will discuss how we can support the people and especially the women in Iran to make sure that their voices continuously get heard, not only amongst us, but also among European and German politics. And I'm very excited because I don't know if you saw it last week, Annalena Baerbock, our foreign minister, gave a very impressive speech on Iran and how to change politics into the direction to help Iran and the people more. And so it's a big evening.
Yeah, I would say I really would wish to be there or to be able to see it somewhere on a live stream. But I guess that you are going to take all your learnings with you and present them in our beautiful podcast, hopefully, because I would really love to know how we can, you know, do an even better job in keeping the voices up and making sure the Iranians are heard.
Yes, I'll definitely do that because there is no live stream and many will ask. It's a very, it's not a closed shop, but I think some of the politicians obviously want this safe space to really talk about what they think and feel before it hits the media. But yes, I will bring along my learnings and we will talk about it next week.
Deep dive.
So as always, we want to give you just a few facts because you're going to learn so much more about the amazing Estonia we visited. But some facts you might not know. So there's 1.3 million inhabitants in Estonia. There's 1,341 startups today in March 2022. And Estonia has been independent since 1991.
And what we didn't know is that there's a very special bond between the two countries. So last year, we celebrated 100 years of diplomatic relations between Germany and Estonia. And it was actually Germany who recognized the Republic of Estonia de jure 100 years ago and thus laying the foundation for formal diplomatic relations. So, there are strong ties. And I think, Lea, we felt them in the minute we landed in Tallinn. Yeah. Oh, what do you say?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I have to say, I already felt them within the airplane ride. You remember that I was listening to podcasts and reading news and kind of giving you my download afterwards, which, you know, Philip, he didn't have to read anything because he knows all that stuff.
He knows everything. It's so annoying.
And even way more. It's so annoying. So you're like, I've learned something new. And he's like, that's because of this and this and this. Yeah. It's actually so interesting, to be honest. But it was already in the airplane. I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited to be able to be there and to have this opportunity to feel like a politician.
And it was seriously
go on
like
a diplomatic trip.
Yeah, we went on a diplomatic trip. And I mean, the moment we got to the gate in Berlin, there was Lily. She is a woman that listened to our podcast when we stated a few months back, oh, we should go to Estonia one day. Yeah, let's do that one day. And then we'll tell you later what she did next. But she was already waiting for us. And from that minute, for me, it was like, it was a mix of like a class trip, like when we were young, and just a best of a country in 36 hours. I can't believe what we put into these 36 hours.
Yeah, and it was so crazy because it was a mix of kind of exactly what you said, friendship and getting to know the city, Tallinn, and the Christmas market and all of that. And then also getting to know the politicians and kind of the governmental body and the startup ecosystem and the female founders and the also male founders, just founders in Tallinn. So it was this mix which you wouldn't ever get
personally, like you don't have that access even. And Lily just pulled that off. So,
and it's a beautiful city. I love this mix of architectural styles. I mean, the Christmas market, unfortunately, it wasn't open yet, but we sneaked in to get some Glöck anyway. And it was on a beautiful marketplace. Then we bought chocolate. I already ate half of it. It's so yummy. So it was just like from 0 to 100. I loved it. And maybe to dive a little into the learnings, because while we were there, we were just like listening and amazed. Mm-hmm. And then when we came back, we kind of took the time to write down what we learned. And maybe you want to go first. Like, what struck you most? Where do you think like, oh my God, that's so impressive?
So I did talk to many people since I've been back about it, because I was just so positively shocked. But I have to say, I was in shock. I was frustrated because I thought we're never going to get there in Germany. And I was impressed because I thought this is crazy. I mean, 25 years ago, they've been already further than we are. I think for me, the number one thing I have to say is Estland has 10 unicorn startups. So they have the highest unicorn per capita rate worldwide. So that little country with 1.3 million has 10 unicorn startups. TransferWise, Skype, and many others. And I think what was so impressive about that is that I felt this can-do attitude and this mindset of it can be done. We are going global in the first second. We are coming from product and tech, kind of this digital, future-oriented, can-do mindset. I felt that wherever we were and with every person we talked to.
It's digital first for them.
Yeah.
And my wow moment was it takes 18 minutes to found a company in Estonia, and afterwards you can run it 100% digitally. So no notary appointment where you have to be physically, no yearly statements, no accounting that has to be stored in files. It's all online. And
yeah.
What struck me was when they were talking about it, they weren't like, we are now super excited and we're using impressive every third word. They weren't. They were just sitting there and saying, yeah, it takes 18 minutes to found a company, but that's already a few years back. So that's already how we do things. So it was also this, they didn't sit there and do marketing to us. They just basically in a very mature way led us through what is online and how they did it. There's a what's the word for Selbstverständnis? So the Selbstverständnis. Yeah. Let's bring in some German words. There was a big Selbstverständnis of their digital identity, and so maybe one second thing about that is, I mean, when we were sitting there in the Ministry of Digitalization and she showed us the citizen portal where just everything is online, from your medicine, so your kind of like
medical
data and records, to your driver license, to all the data about you, how much kids, where do you live, everything. And it was all one click here, one click there. And the best news, because I know Germany is obsessed with data protection, was there was also a data tracker in there who just showed you every single time somebody accesses your data. And if you don't like it or you don't know why that person, the police or whoever accessed your data, you just say, I don't know why. Can you please give me a reason? And if there are no good reasons, they are fines. So strafen. Yeah. So data protection is equally important to them as it is to digitalize the processes in the first place.
Yeah, and they told us that there was a politician getting sick, right? And some doctors who were his friends accessed his data because they're doctors, they could, like the medical data. They had talked to him and kind of accessed it as a friend and wanted to help him with his sickness. And they got fired anyways because they said, you know, you weren't allowed to. So they take data protection, even for the right reasons, super strictly. And I think that was also in the next interview we're going to hear, that was also something which struck me. It's not either or, but and. Yes, we're super digital and love being online and not wasting our time in bureaucratic processes. And we care a lot about data protection. I think if you really make that so clear, I mean, you have this one ID card and you don't have a driving license anymore because it's on that ID card. You don't have an insurance card anymore because it's on that ID card. You only need kind of credit cards, but basically they told us they can't put the credit cards on there because the credit card companies still wanted to keep their logo. So it's not even that it's not possible, but the credit card companies like Visa, MasterCard, they wanted to keep their logo and they didn't want to put the logo on their national ID card of MasterCard or Visa, which makes sense. And then you have this e-login for the same ID card. So you wouldn't even need the physical one, to be honest, because you have the e-login. And then you use that e-login even if you go to other websites. And talking about data protection, we are using our Google logins, Amazon logins, Facebook logins, Apple logins to log in everywhere. So all these American companies know so much about my buying behavior, about my travel behavior, about where I go with Google Maps, what I see, what I like, what I buy, and so and so and so. And for them, they just use their own login. And that is crazy that kind of the public and private sector were able to both agree that that's a good system. I think that's just amazing.
I love it. A single login, yeah? A single source of truth, a single identifier. I mean, wouldn't that be heaven? We're talking about the EID in Germany, I don't know, for decades. But I don't want to bash Germany. Let's go back to Estonia. What was also so impressive is that the first thing when you hear all this that you think like, yeah, okay, for digital natives or 30 to 50 year olds, but what about the 70 to 90 year olds? How are you going to bring those on board who are not really comfortable with this digital world? Because the EID has 100% penetration in Estonia. Everyone has it. And they said, yeah, what we did is we kind of met the people where they were, in supermarkets, at bus stops, in libraries. Libraries are their number one educational spaces in Estonia. That's where they train their people. And that's where they answer every question over and over again, show this citizen portal, show how it works. And that impressed me so much because I feel like libraries don't play any role in educating our population, our people. We have the Volkshochschulen, but even those I haven't entered in 20 or 30 years for anything. So I think having educational spaces for your people is equally important than having the processes and the services in place. Because obviously, if you don't get taught and you can't answer questions, then nobody will learn it.
Totally. And I think that the government is also humble enough to say, if we put something new in place, we need to sell it and market it. And we don't just develop within our ecosystem without asking anybody. But they don't do big projects. They do small MVPs, always cooperative with private companies. And then they do like little MVPs and test it with people. And then they roll out piece by piece and not huge projects, which never get done, which are always late, which are much more expensive, which frustrate everybody. No, they do basically A/B testing with the people as their kind of target group. And they have like also like a failure tolerance. So if something doesn't work or something does leak or something goes wrong, then they just go public about it and they do a press release immediately and they talk about it openly and they get everybody involved in front of the camera and they say, this is what happens. This is what happened. This is what we did. This is why there like a problem happened over there. And this is how we're going to fix it in the long run and so on. And that's why kind of the trust is so high in this digital infrastructure. And to be honest, if you talk to people, everybody's like the main sentence they say, it's just so easy. And that was like, I got a shiver every time somebody said it, because I thought that would be the last thing I would ever say about the German administration. Like, the last 2 weeks, you couldn't even register a company in Berlin because the Handelskammer had closed, because they were doing an update and kind of overworked. So they closed. So you couldn't even start a company. I couldn't get an au pair to help us so that I can work and bring in taxes for Germany. I couldn't get an au pair because there was no spots to talk to the government to get a visa for that au pair. So I had to get an au pair from Europe, because outside of Europe is not possible. So it's just so frustrating to spend your time with things which are so not value adding.
No, it's not this idea of being a service provider to the people. And so that's why I love the sentence on their website, get in touch with your country. I mean, it hasn't crossed my mind a single day that I thought if I get in touch with my country digitally, anyone on the other end would be happy about me getting in touch. Yeah. And would always be like, oh no, she wants something from us. Can't she call? Can't she come? Why is she writing an email? And so what's also amazing, I mean, everything is online over there. They vote online. You can even get divorced or marry online by the end of this year. I mean, that's crazy. We just asked the question, what happens if you were a little drunk and then you had a fight and then you got divorced online and next morning you make up again? And they said, no, that's fine. You can, you still have some time to take it back. But it just shows this digital first mentality. And it also obviously goes for that tax statements. It's 3 clicks and then your tax declaration is finished. It's with children's money that they say when a baby is born, you don't have to apply for an insurance number or for child care or for money for your child. We know that it's there, and no citizen in the world will say that he doesn't want money and that he doesn't want insurance. So we just give it to you. Yeah. And so I loved it. I loved it. But you're right. It feels a little bit frustrating to be back.
Yeah. But I do have to say, I think the part of, and I mean, that's also your focus and has been and still is, the whole part of, you know, coding is part of the education system. So the kids learn how to code, the teachers learn how, like they get a digital kind of base education, and they get a continuous further education on new topics like AI and robotics and so on. So I think these are all aspects which you are already dealing with. And obviously, I mean, both of us know that we are, you know, over 80 million people and they're over one. So obviously the complexity is much different, and our history and our where our data comes from. I mean, Estonia basically started again on a fresh field from scratch, 1991. Yeah. So they build up everything themselves again. Yeah, that's different for us. But we often have the feeling that the discussion stops there. Data protection, yes, we're many, and we have a legacy, a tech legacy. Okay, fine. But what's the alternative? That we stay there and always use those explanations so that we don't move on and move forward? So I think that was something which we left and we were like, wow, we have a lot to catch up on.
And I think that's why this one also goes out to the mayors listening here. Hopefully lots of mayors from Germany listening, because we're fine that if we're a federal system with 16 states and 83 million people, that it's not
and
as
an
easy
older
to,
generation yeah, and or an older, like an older yeah
yeah so mm-hmm. that it's not as easy to centralize things like it is there. But what about all the communal city and all those smaller entities? There we could have lighthouses in Germany that just say, look, this city or this communal area or this part of Germany is doing everything Estonia is doing, at least at a regional level. So I think we can raise the bar, we can lift up our ambitions a little bit, and we can learn from the best. And I would say Estonia is best in class when it comes to digitalizing their democracy.
And now we are super excited that we were able to talk to Kersti Kaljulaid, who is an economist and politician. She was the youngest and first female president of the Republic of Estonia from 2016 to 2021. After studying biology and business management, Kersti was active in banking for a longer time and was the first woman to run a power plant in Estonia. In summer 2021, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appointed President Kaljulaid to the position of Global Advocate for the Every Woman and Every Child Strategy on the health and well-being of women, children, and adolescents around the world for the next 2 years. Kersti was also the first Estonian ever to be selected by the prestigious magazine of Forbes as one of their world's 100 most influential women. Kersti, it's so great to have you as a guest on our podcast, Fast and Curious. Welcome.
Madam President, you were the first female president of Estonia. We have never had a female president in Germany. What did that do to the country? Was that a huge impact? Was that a big deal?
You had a chancellor. Was that a big
True?
Deal?
Yes, True.
That was a big deal.
That was yes. a big deal.
Exactly. And at the same time, I'm quite sure that neither Angela Merkel or me, we did any decisions one way or another way because we are women.
No.
Basically, what it changes is the pattern in the society, like children in the kindergarten in Estonia, for example, draw very often pictures of our Independence Day, and then they draw a president who is a woman. So they will never have this question, can a president be a woman? I think that's the biggest change. So nothing you do, but simply how you are.
Yeah. You're just a role model by doing it. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely, because I really don't believe that there exists any kind of politics which women always do the same way and men differently the other way. So this doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's about diversity in general. And I think one thing we were also so impressed by since we're here is the fluidity between people working in the private sector and then changing in the political sector and the other way around. So you really have that transfer of knowledge and wisdom and experts. So somehow your governmental body must be something inspiring and intriguing. You know, we talked to Sandra yesterday, who said she changed from Facebook into the government because she wanted to have a faster and more agile and fast-paced and impactful environment.
Now that is smart. You are the only one to whom I didn't have to explain that all Estonian kind of agility in public sector, yeah. including digital development, doesn't stem from technology of this country, but exactly from this fact that we totally freely move between public and private sector and the political class, for that matter. And the reason for that is how we have actually arranged our society. For example, your pension system, your healthcare is the same for everybody. And within that system, it doesn't matter where you work. So you don't win anything from staying long time in ministry, mm-hmm. or you don't lose anything from leaving private sector coming to support mm-hmm. government. Of course, you will earn less, but overall, this is the guarantee. And I believe truly this is why Estonia does differ in tech uptake in general, in public sector, because we don't see public and private as two separate things, actually.
Yeah, and the results prove you right, because over the past day, I mean, we already knew before you must be doing a lot right in terms of digitalization, but now we're really jealous because we learned about the EID being your health insurance and your driving license at the same time. We looked at the citizen kind of portal where you can access everything. You have a data tracker, who accessed your data when. So when it comes to digitalization, in my eyes, the world looks to Estonia. What are the ingredients, or just kind of take us on the way? When did it start and how did you do it? Because what came out of it is really something which other countries could take now and say, okay, we don't have to all invent it from scratch again.
Yeah, we started with the first pilot, which was actually an electronic tax board. And of course, it was modeled on private sector. In fact, it ran on private sector infrastructure because banks in Estonia in 1994 realized that there is pretty little money in this country, but they wanted to serve all 1 million people. Our average salaries were in 92, actually, were $30. I don't remember what they were in 94, but not much higher then. And that meant that they took technology to help them to serve people without, I mean, being able to ask people to pay for the bank's services as they were in their own home country, because our banks are actually Scandinavian. So 94, they started. 97, the government asked the banks, could we use your infrastructure for electronic tax board? Mm-hmm. And we did, and it was a success. Actually, I've never declared taxes in office, because 97 happens to be the first year I had to declare taxes. And then banks came back to us and said, yeah, it's wonderful, but you know, we're not going to take responsibility for identification based on our technologies forever. Mm-hmm. And they talked the government into introducing a digital ID. It took them about 2-3 years. Because government definitely saw that it wanted to continue providing services online. And of course, banks said that, I mean, you've used our infrastructure and it would be much easier for all of us if we had a single digital infrastructure.
Absolutely.
And then it was put together this way that indeed we have a digital ID which works for government services and for private services and for international service providers. If they so wish, they can link up as well. So there's no limitation. And this made from our digital ID, the passport online. I mean, in analog world, you wouldn't sell your apartment, for example, without knowing who is the other side.
Of course
not. You ask for passport. So there's no anonymity in serious transactions. And why on earth should there be anonymity in digital transactions? I mean, so we kind of removed this anonymity from digital economy, which of course helped it to grow. And also the positive side effect was that if the government put services online, the private sector was doing so quicker. So with the single digital ID, you were always exercised. I mean, I don't know, I visit the government office maybe twice a year, but I visit my bank account basically daily, which means that everybody got well versed in using the digital ID, not by, I mean, government services, but by the bank. I believe banks and telcos were most
helpful.
And
now today, 100% of the population have this EID, right?
From the day one, actually, everybody did, because we just sneaked it onto our digital, onto our ID card, which is also the travel card that we all have in Europe. So everybody had it, even if not everybody was using it. And that was one argument, that we give it to everybody. Gradually, I mean, people will start more and more using it, because if we force people to go and apply, it definitely would take longer time.
And I think what we were so impressed by as well is how people kind of governed and kind of pitched for that ID. So you had people in the libraries actually being there and explaining it and talking to people and answering their questions. So it was a very open dialogue between the government and the public.
Yeah, it was. It was Tiger Leap, and it was part financed by private sector, part by government. And you have to remember, we are talking turn of the century. People didn't have computers at home. They were in schools and libraries. And indeed, it went something like that. You find an old lady waiting for a bus in the rain. And then the voluntary comes out of the library, because bus stop normally is in front of library or school, and asks grandmother, why are you going to town? And the grandmother says, well, I need to go to social service office to deal with my pension issues. And then the volunteer would say, come in, we'll resolve it here and now, and before the bus comes. So if we don't manage, you can still take the bus. And things resolved. And now, of course, this is, I mean, 20 years ago. So you don't have this problem that elderly people are not internet compatible. I mean, who is now 70 was then 50. I mean, so we found out that when COVID broke out, that we had far less of a problem of exclusion for elderly, because they could easily, I mean, use IT tools. My mother, she's 81, she's on Facebook. I mean, and so grannies became Facebook compatible simply because the government, I mean, introduced internet to them. So there are also positive societal side effects in this.
Now, Germany is obsessed with data protection. Whenever we talk about digitalization, somebody raises his or her hand and says, yeah, but what about data protection?
We are too. We are too,
exactly.
Madly.
And that was the impressive part.
It doesn't exclude each other.
And we got a live example yesterday of your data tracker, where you can see who accessed your data, when and why. And if you don't like it, or you feel like, why did they, you can actually raise your hand and say, why did you access my data? How come? Or can you explain, like, why doesn't it exclude each other, and how do you do it in a safe way?
Well, we basically realized from the day one that it cannot be unregulated. It has to be permissive, but still kind of, I mean, clear legal space in which we use our digital tools. The same applies for Estonian genome space, actually. Very similarly, we made it very clear to our people what the government does and doesn't do with their data, and government has to keep to these restrictions. And indeed, I mean, of course, you can never say that databases are 300% secure, but it is very easy to demonstrate they are far safer than paper files, because nobody in Germany knows who read their medical file yesterday in the doctor's office.
No way.
Well, I know. And that's why I can say that the safety is actually superior. I don't have to prove it that it works 300% of time, but the government has created the legal space and is actually following those who illegally have checked the data. We had a funny case where one doctor fell ill and his colleagues wanted to help him desperately. So everybody was looking at his file, forgetting it's forbidden because they are not the treating doctor. And thereafter, government actually prosecuted them, even if the doctor recovered and said, these are my friends, don't do it. But it was illegal. And in principle, well, fines were not that high in that case. But in principle, the government did take this issue to the court because it's illegal. And that's, I mean, how by setting the legal space and also implementing these laws, you do create the belief in people that the data is indeed safe and secure. And none of us here now thinks paper could be anyway safer.
True. So true. I think what was so positively shocking yesterday is that everybody said, it's just so easy, like everything bureaucratic, administrative, and so on. Even talking about it for us in Germany, it, you know, it drains your energy the second you start thinking about it. So, and here you have your certificates online, you have your health insurance records online, you have just everything. You do the tax declaration and it's kind of clicking three times because they already know you have children, they already deducted everything. So I think the difference is not even imaginable for those listening right now. And everybody said, it's just so easy. Is there anything which still frustrates you in Estonia, which is not digitalized yet?
Absolutely. No, not digitalized. This not. But there are many things. For example, we quite often find it very difficult to interlink, I mean, EU data developments like Schengen 2 and 3 to our system. And we normally, it normally takes us very long to get these things done because, I mean, the logic is missing. We have this kind of central thing, is digital ID, and all services are like rays of the sun, I mean, directly linked through the nucleus. And then when you have to work together with the European system, which has different architectural logic, then actually we're struggling quite a lot. So it's not always easy. Otherwise, it frustrates every Estonian who moves away from this country. I've lived in Central Europe and it felt like, you know, hi guys, washing machine has been invented. Don't go to the river and wash your clothes in cold water. I mean, actually, the difference is so big. We save five working days every year, everybody. And we all have only 100 years on this planet.
Absolutely. I just learned we only have 4,000 weeks if we turn 80. And I feel that's quite, that sounds very little time. So we better use it wisely. What my big fascination about the digitalization of societies is that in my eyes, it enhances the trust in the government when you feel like you have a functioning state. And if you feel like I write an email or I go online and I actually not only get a reaction, I get real quality back. What is your perception on that? What's the trust of the Estonian people in the government? Do you see an uptake because you are such a digital functioning government, or would you say, no, that's not directly linked?
Many people have weird expectations about digitalization, like it automatically gets rid of corruption. It doesn't. You need to, I mean, other tools to make sure that there is no corruption. Trust in government, if you mean trust in public sector, then this is indeed in Estonia generally high. But if you ask Estonian people, they would still think that it's better elsewhere because this is how Estonians are and we are a young democracy. So we see only higher living standards elsewhere and so on. Mm-hmm. Trust in Estonian political system is not at all higher than in Germany. And it has absolutely no influence, this digital ecosystem, on that. Indeed, some parties actually use it against, I mean, this kind of trust between people and government, like asking questions about e-voting and so on. Even if these questions are technically unfounded, we know how populists are. They absolutely don't care about the facts and the truth. And they're very hard to fight with facts. So we do have this problem even. And we have to, I mean, figure out how to deal with it daily. And I cannot say that, voila, we've succeeded. So don't expect digitally transformed societies to somehow otherwise become better. They don't.
So you still have to put all the work in that you do generally.
It's like the foundation, you have to get it right, but then you have to do everything else on top anyway.
No automatic change for better from going digital. Like you probably know, I mean, if you digitize a mess, you get a more efficient mess.
True.
If you digitize, let's say, an authoritarian regime, you only make it easier for the government to actually oppress their people.
Yeah. Another thing which we find so interesting, obviously, you talking to two German entrepreneurs, is your entrepreneurial spirit and scene in Estonia. I think the unicorn per capita rate is one of the highest in the world. So you have 10 unicorns within Estonia alone, leading with obviously Skype, which everybody knows. Kind of what are the ingredients for that flourishing startup scene?
First of Skype. And we were so lucky that because our economic climate and the environment is really good, Skype founders brought most of their money back to Estonia. And many of their colleagues found new startups. So we learned relatively early, about 20 years ago, that it is doable. That, I mean, a small company starting in a small country is scalable to global levels, therefore also to global pricing. And since then, we've not considered it impossible. And more and more, we have, if you go to our Vabamu Museum, Freedom's Museum, you have kind of, they have put together a family tree. You can see how founders, great mm-hmm. founders, help other founders. And indeed, now it is having a real macroeconomic effect because ICT is as big as agriculture in Estonia.
Right.
So now you cannot, I think it would took quite strong effort from the government side to, I mean, somehow ruin it now.
You can't ignore
it's possible.
Yeah.
Of course, it's possible doing totally stupid decisions mm-hmm. at political level, but in principle, you don't have to kind of nurture it very much. It mm-hmm. does happen. And it's what I now like is that, of course, initial things were all in kind of strictly narrowly digital services. Now I see this startup very much in energy sector, for example. I myself invested this year into one, preparing to documents to invest into another kind of energy sector startup,
mm-hmm.
because this culture spreads into mm-hmm. other areas. And while Estonia has been very slow to kind of digitize and automatize traditional economic sectors like agriculture, wood, and others, of course, I mean, there is automatization and so on, but not to the level of the best German examples, certainly not. But then these new startups in every sector, they look for something totally new and greenfield. Like, for example, you don't automatize the production of electric generators using diesel fuel. Instead, you find and create an opportunity to build a generator which uses hydrogen. I mean, instead of, I mean, trying to make a better process in and how to handle the loading system for electric vehicles, you go and create a startup which basically does it from the scratch. And I mean, while it links to the existing grid, makes the use of the grid far more efficient and so on, so on. So it's now spreading into all sectors and disrupting all other sectors as well. And it's particularly interesting that right now, of course, all traditional economy is very much suffering because, I mean, there is a lack of confidence on capital markets because of the Russian aggression against Ukraine. But we don't see it affecting the startup sector.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You traveled to Germany several times and you just said that Estonians are sometimes not content with how it is here and they look to other countries and say, look, this is far better. I think we Germans are very similar. We are our strongest critics. Yeah, we tend to not market our country very well. We always see the problems more than the chances. When you travel to Germany, what impresses you? What surprises you? Where do you think we could be proud of?
The wealth. And the mass. I mean, once you move quickly and big time. And therefore, I'm still quite sure that while it takes time to put really into use your digital ID, and there are indeed kind of blockers on the way, like you have to buy with it this ID reader and it costs quite a lot and so on, these things. And you have made some kind of missteps in creating, let's say, a black box of an e-health system, which is closed off to the other industries even, and of course to the other sectors. So I think you have to redo some things. But in overall, I mean, you are a big country. So if you want to, you can do things really, really quickly. So your leaders command resources, which here we can only dream of.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. It's a big ship, but when it moves, you can't really stop it.
And right now, it's very unfair what you're doing to the whole European economy, because, you know, we're supposed to compete on equal grounds among ourselves, but we aren't. Because if you subsidize energy sector to the level like you do by buying up companies and so on, this feeds through as a subsidy to all other sectors. And we can never out-subsidize you because we simply don't have resources. So I think we need to end this very quickly. Otherwise, I mean, smaller countries get very disappointed, but it's, of course, for the European Commission to resolve. Only Germany, of course, has to make sure that, I mean, Germany is also in the boat to resolve it.
That's a very interesting last statement, because we, as the population, also have a very, like, challenging view on the fact that we are spending a lot of our money on subsidizing energy instead of investing it into the future.
Yes,
so,
and meanwhile ruining the European common market.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, there are a lot of challenges, and we thank you very much, Madam President, for taking your time for these very interesting insights. And we hope Germany's listening so that digitalization is something where we move faster in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jetzt kommt Werbung.
Ja, heute möchten wir euch mal wieder HelloFresh vorstellen. Und ich stelle das wirklich so gerne vor, weil HelloFresh mir dabei hilft, so zu tun vor meiner Familie, als hätte ich großartige Kochkünste. Und Da bin ich HelloFresh sehr dankbar, weil es ist irgendwie innerhalb von einer Stunde zum Beispiel gut machbar zu kochen. Ich habe alle Sachen vor Ort, alles eingekauft in den richtigen Portionen. Ich muss es nur noch zusammenhauen. Ich halte mich an das Rezept und es schmeckt dann auch allen, was bei meinen eigenen Kreationen noch nicht zu 100% der Fälle so ist. Und deswegen nutze ich das total gerne. Unter anderem auch deswegen, weil ich jede Woche aus über 40 verschiedenen abwechslungsreichen Rezepten auswählen darf. Und dazu gibt es halt immer so eine Rezeptkarte und damit sind die Gerichte unfassbar einfach und schnell zubereitet. Und du bekommst quasi so eine Kochbox und erlebst damit täglich eine kulinarische Reise durch die Welt von vertrauten Klassikern bis zu richtig kreativen Neuinterpretationen.
Ja, und apropos kreative Neuinterpretationen, jetzt nur im April verfügbar sind limitierte Gerichte auf einer Reise durch Japan, Korea, Malaysia à la Taste of Asia verfügbar. Also zum Beispiel japanische Sakura Bowl, malaysischer Laksa oder koreanische Fleischbällchen. Und wenn ihr jetzt Hunger bekommen habt, dann schaut doch mal vorbei auf www.hellofresh.de/fast, fast großgeschrieben. In Österreich auf www.hellofresh.at/fast, großgeschrieben. Und in der Schweiz auf www.hellofresh.ch/fast, großgeschrieben. Und mit unserem Gutscheincode FAST, auch wieder groß geschrieben, spart ihr in Deutschland bis zu 120 Euro, in Österreich bis zu 130 Euro und in der Schweiz bis zu 140 Franken. Und außerdem ist der Versand auf die erste Box kostenlos und der Code gilt für neue und ehemalige Kunden und Kundinnen. Also jetzt einfach den Gutscheincode FAST groß geschrieben eingeben und leckeres Essen für euch selbst und eure Liebsten bestellen, das einfach und schnell zubereitet werden kann. Alle Infos findet ihr wie immer auch in unseren Shownotes. Guten Appetit.
Werbung Ende. Win of the Week. Yeah, I love this category. We've never had it, but today it works so well because our Win of the Week are two things. First of all, Lily is our Win of the Week and we will talk about her in a minute. But secondly is how she behaved is like a best practice for how you get in touch with people, how you network, how you give first before you take back, and how you just create an atmosphere where everyone has the feeling of, I want to put everything into it, what I have, and not I want to hold back because I don't feel comfortable. Or what do you say, Leah?
100%. And I think it started already with her first email. So as you said earlier, I mean, this whole trip only came into place because I've been to London, talked about a lot of British people starting companies in Estonia. We talked about Estonia. And then Lily writes us an email and we get many emails and many we cannot answer. You try it anyways. And and Lily's email was so spot on. It was so clear. It was like, I heard you talking about Estonia. I love the country. I've been there for half a year. I'm a founder myself. I want to show you around. If you ever feel like it, I've done it for Wolfgang Ischinger and other people. So this is what I do. Here is like an outline of how the days would look like with who we would meet, how long it would take and so on. And then she said, and to be quite clear and transparent, I don't want anything back. Like, this is just me falling in love with the country of Estonia and you talking about it and me wanting to excite you for this country because it's so interesting. And it's not like, yes, I'm a founder, but I don't need anything from you. I don't want anything from you. And so on. It was so humble and positive and excited and spot on and clear that we had to say yes.
We had to say yes. And then she ping-ponged with Annick, my personal assistant, for months and came up with a program, which she then also drafted in Canva. We can present that as a tool of the week one day. So we got like, it looked like the best menu card of a restaurant with our 2 days, with a briefing on the country, with briefing on every people we talked to. And I mean, now listen to this. After we got back, she basically debriefed us in a way that I thought I'm the Chancellor of Germany. So all of this happened without her wanting anything back. She didn't even want to talk about her company because she felt that would be out of place because that's not why we're there. And the second thing she also didn't want is She paid her flights. She paid her hotel. She didn't say anything about expenses. And I think why we're mentioning all this is that we don't say this is how it should be. But in the minute where somebody approaches you in that way, all you want to do is to give back. And yeah. So, of course, we paid her flights. Of course, we kind of wanted to invite her to every yeah. tiny little glug.
And spend time with her on her company and so Absolutely. On. Absolutely. Obviously. But if somebody is so invested without, yes, and now you need to give me, and this is back and forth, and I give one and you give one. Like, it's just so, you just fall in love with that person and with whatever they stand for, and you want to help. It's just a natural thing.
No, and now we're so friends. This is something we'll never forget, these 36 hours. You're even going to the Rixdorfer Weihnachtsmarkt with her to drink yeah. Glühwein against Glück. And I think because Lily didn't really talk a lot about her company, the 36 hours, why don't we talk about it here now? Because I think that's the best thing we can give back to show you what this young, amazing woman founded.
Yes. So this, Lily, is going to be an advertisement for your company. So there's this amazing company called Centu, and they are on a mission. And the mission is to eliminate the shame around the intimate area. And as you know my history, I know what I'm talking about because I'm from the sex tech area and basically started that whole ecosystem in Germany. And so other
the
people
godmother.
Like...
You're the godmother.
I'm the godmother of sex tech. Oh, God. No, please don't.
I like that.
And now many, many other companies are following. And Lily basically had that... that moment, that epiphany through a representative survey. So she asked many people and they basically said, half of the people said that they often... or they were not intimate with their partners because they thought they were not pretty enough in their private parts, or they had problems like itching, like redness, like burn, like, you know, something which is not comfortable. And obviously, I think as you probably know, we have so many creams and makeup and everything for our body and our hair and our... and everything, right? We have for our eyebrows special treatments, and we have, yeah, for our under eyes, iPads and everything. So every little inch of our body, we can have an extra cream and formula and peeling for it. But I have never heard anybody say, you know, I have this new intimate cream, which I'm using. And that is basically what Lily started. So she launched an intimate aftershave.
So you can... go to Instagram, follow Centu. The products are 100% natural. They're produced in Germany. They're vegan. And she even has a special code for you. The code is called Lea Verena. She only gave us the code after we asked. Yeah, she would have never come up with it herself because she's too modest. So it's Lea Verena, upper lowercase, the same. So all in small writing. And you get 15% off your first order. So just go to centu.de, S-E-N-T-O-U, enter our discount code and order your product.
And it's important to say that the product is gender neutral. So her co-founder swears that the aftershave, after shaving, he also uses in his face because it's, you know, you don't have burn, you don't have redness, you don't have itchiness. So if you don't need it for your intimate area, you can also use it for your face.
So Lily, you go girl, you impressed us, you amazed us, you reminded us a little bit of our younger selves, but we weren't as good as you. And many people out there can learn from you how to do it right. Tool of the week.
Yes, Verena, so last time we talked about Figma because I'm still trying to design my certificates. I actually have one now.
Oh,
so
good.
I really like it.
Good,
yeah, so
because I feel sorry for
day.
The first cohort that they're still waiting.
No, you don't have to. It's going to be amazing. You know what? You're going to get a special participant certificate or like an observer certificate.
Participation star.
It's a participation star certificate. You're getting one just so that I can show you what Figma can do.
Maybe you can give me a certificate of being your co-host. I mean, I do this every week and I get absolutely no respect from you.
Okay, you're getting a certificate for being my co-host certificate. And we are designing it in Figma. So Figma is a collaborative design software. And you can create kind of prototypes for UI, UX, and other design work. Any templates, product designs, and so on. And the nice thing is, in Figma, you can actually design, you can move stuff around, you can comment, you can look at older versions, and so on. I do have to say that whenever I look at software, so I used to work with InVision Studio, which is an alternative to Figma, which is sadly way more expensive. But I always go to omr.com/reviews and I check, because they are reviewing all the software. And I always check kind of the experience with the software. And I have to say that Figma has 4.6 stars on OMR reviews, which is amazing. And you can read all of the different experiences of people, and that you can see the alternative products. You can see screenshots, you can see how it looks and how the pricing is. So I can really recommend kind of the review platform of OMR while doing so, because then you also see that InVision Studio is not rated as highly at all, sadly. But you're also using Figma, right, Verena?
Yes, for our book club, for Verena's book club, because we have all these fancy pantsy graphics like pick of the month and
your new logo,
exactly,
the highlight buttons. Yeah, yeah, I saw.
And, yeah, and we're coming up with cool stickers this week because you said we have to get more playful. So now we're more playful. Wait for it to come. And so all of that is also done in Figma. I must say that Constanze, who is my sidekick in the book club, is far better at it than me. Yeah, but yeah, it's a great tool. And even, I mean, when we work together with Silberpuls, who are designing our covers here of Fast and Curious and who have done so much work for you especially, they are in love with Figma. So I think it's definitely a tool for everyone out there to look at if you want to have a design software which can be used in a very easy, intuitive way.
I do have to say, though, if I compare it to the one, as I said, I used before, the InVision Studio, it's a little bit like Trello and Asana. You know, like Trello is a little bit fancy. Everything's super intuitive. Everything has round edges and looks fancy and nice and somehow easy to use. And that's obviously something I really like. And then Figma is a little bit more... It really feels a little bit, yeah, it feels a little bit like an Adobe Photoshop. So you do need to know what to do and how to skillfully use it, because if not, you also move stuff without finding it again or deleting stuff which you didn't want to delete. So it definitely is a professional tool. But I think in terms of the pricing specifically, there's nothing better. And in terms of how much you can do with it, so that you can design and collaborate and comment and so on. It's not just a tool for sharing, which some of the others do, but also for really designing in there. I think it's the best solution out there currently.
We have reached the end of this very special episode, and many of you will say, thank God, because probably you're totally exhausted from listening to us stumbling through this episode in English. But all of this is a very warm thank you to our Estonian friends that listened, because they were all very disappointed when we met them in Estonia and they heard that this podcast is in German. So this one goes out to you guys for giving us these memorable 36 hours in Tallinn. And to all our other dear listeners, as sexy as I find it listening to Lea speaking English, we will be back in German next week.
Yes.
If Lea manages to escape Tony Robbins for an hour, that's a big if, yeah? But if she does, we're back next week in German with another great episode of this lovely podcast. And now Lea has the last word.
Walter Scheel. A democracy is always on the way to itself. It is never finished.
Dieser Podcast wird produziert von Podstars bei OMR.